The previous Mishnah brought two testimonies, one in the name of Rabbi Yeshua and another one in the name of Rabbi Papias. The next two Mishnayos will bring five different testimonies, which Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Papias testified together, and the first of those regards a law which is learned out of Pesukim, that if somebody has designated a korban to be a korban shalomim, and before that animal is offered up, the animal gives birth. So it's learned from Pesukim that that animal which is born also has the same status as a korban shalomim. And indeed, here Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Papias testified al vlad shel shlom shikav shlomim, that the child of an animal which was designated as a korban shlomim should also be offered up on the mizbeach as a korban shlomim. Now the testimony was against the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, because Rabbi Eliezer held that shvlad shlomim lo yikav shlomim, that the child born from an animal designated to be a korban shlomim should not be offered up as a korban shlomim. And it's only the Chachom will hold that it should be offered up as a korban shalomim. So the testimony of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Papias supports the opinion of the Chachomim. Now, even Rabbi Eliezer agrees that midoraisa, the child, should be bought as a korban. And Rabbi Eliezer only says that it should not be offered as a korban shalomim, midrabbonon, reason being that we are afraid that if somebody knows that as soon as his animal, which has been designated as a korban, will give birth, that the baby animal will also be considered a korban. So we're afraid that somebody will delay the offering up of his korban in order to wait for it to give birth, and that way he'll have two korbanos to offer up. However, we don't want him to delay offering up the korban, because he might come to work with the animal, to cut off the wool of the animal. These things are forbidden once the animal has been designated as a korban. But if he's delaying the animal for so long, the offering up of the korban, then he might come to violate one of these prohibitions of working the animal, etc. And therefore we say that midrabbanon, if the animal gives birth, the child cannot be offered up as a korban, and then there'll be no motivation to delay the offering up of the korban, and he won't come to violating the prohibition of working the animal or shearing the animal and such. And indeed, Omar Rabbi Papias said, he added, and he made, I testify, Shahoy Salomi Para Zivchi Shlomim, that we, my own family, we had a cow that was designated as a korban shlomim, v'achalnu ha b'pesach, and we ate that korban shlomim on Pesach, v'achalnu v'loda shlomim b'chog, and we ate the child of that korban shlomim, the animal gave birth, and we ate the child b'chog, which in this context in the Mishnah is referring to Shavuos. On the following Shavuos, we ate the child as a korban shlomim, so we see like the opinion of the Chachomim, and like my testimony together with Rabbi Yeshua's testimony. Mishnah Zayin, midoraisa, a wooden utensil, a wooden item, can only become tomei if it is a container for something, if it can hold something. And therefore, pshutei klei eitz, which means a wooden item which is flat and cannot hold things, midoraisa, that cannot become tomei. That having been said, midrabbanon, even pshutei klei eitz can become tomei, as long as there are other conditions fulfilled to define it as a utensil, which has enough significance. So Heim Heidu, they, meaning Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Papias, testified ala ruches shel nachtoimim shem tameis, about the wooden beams which were used as surfaces by bakers, shem tameis, that they can become tomei. Even though they are pshutekli eitz, which are bonon, they can become tomei. Shereb Eliezer metahar, because once again Rabbi Eliezer argues, and Rabbi Eliezer holds that they are tohar and they cannot become tomei. Even though Rabbi Eliezer agrees that midrabbanon pshutekli eitz can become tomei, Rabbi Eliezer held that these beams weren't even considered to be utensils. They lack that significance because other conditions were not met to even be considered utensils, and therefore even on a midrabbanon level they cannot become tomei, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Alright, third testimony of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Papias, he may idol tanur shechatoche chulyos, they testified regarding a oven that somebody had cut into different parts, and that means that it was cut horizontally going up the oven. So you ended up with lots of different pieces, which if you had put together one piece on top of the other, you'd end up with the same oven as you had originally. But it was split up into lots of different parts. And the truth is, this is exactly how to purify an oven. If an oven becomes tomei, the way to purify it is by breaking it, such that there won't be any piece of the oven which is at least four tefachim high, four tefachim tall. So it's broken up into those smaller pieces so that it will be tahar and lose its tumah. And then v'nosal chol ben chulya l'chulya. A person placed sand in between each of the parts, and then he stuck them all together. So Rabbi Yishron and Rabbi Papias testified, show Tome that it is able to become Tome. If something Tome touches this oven, it will become Tome. Shebel Yezer Metaher, because according to Shebel Yezer, it cannot become Tome. The sand stops each part of the oven combining to be considered one oven, and each piece by itself is not considered to be a significant enough utensil to become Tome. Only if we look at it all together as one big thing, as one big oven, then it can become Tome. And according to Eliezer, because you put sand in between each part, that stops all of the parts combining to be considered one big oven, and therefore it cannot become Tome. But according to Rabbi Yishron and Rabbi Papias, since at the end of the day you did stick each piece together, they do combine, they are now considered to be one large oven, and therefore it can become Tome just like a regular oven. Now, in the times of the Mishnah, there was not a fixed calendar, and the dates of Rosh Chodesh would be determined by witnesses seeing the Rosh Chodesh moon. And as well as that, there would also be a leap year, which was sometimes added, just like there is nowadays as well, just that it's a fixed calendar nowadays. In times of the Mishnah, they would decide each year whether to make that year into a leap year or not. The main purpose of making a leap year is to ensure that the seasons remain at the same time working out with Yom Tovim, so that Pesach will always fall during the spring. B'yazimei, heim he'idu, Rabbi Yishron, Rabbi Papias testified, Shema'abrin es ha'shono b'chol ador, that the Beis Din are able to declare the year leap year throughout the whole of Adar, all the way until the 29th of Adar. They can decide to add on an extra month in Adar Sheni, and to declare that year a leap year. Shehoyu Omrim, because people, the Chachomim, would say until this testimony arrived at a Purim, that they can only declare the year to be a leap year until Purim. But after Purim they wouldn't be able to, and the reason for that is because the law is that 30 days before Yom Tov, people need to start learning about the laws of that Yom Tov. Now, 30 days before Pesach is Purim, which would mean that from Purim onwards, the Chachomim, the Rabbanon, would start teaching the people about the laws of Pesach. And they would announce that Pesach is in a month, and we need to prepare. Now, if the Beis Din declared a leap year after Purim, after they'd already started to tell people that Pesach was in another month, then the people wouldn't necessarily believe the new message which was being given to them, that actually Pesach has been delayed for another month because there's a leap year, there's an extra month added onto the year. And the people would still think that Pesach is in another month, and they would come to celebrate Pesach then, and a month after that, when it's really Pesach, according to the fact that a leap year was made, they would not keep Pesach, and they would end up eating chometz on what is the real, true Pesach. And so in order to avoid any of that situation, they had originally said that the law is we're not going to make a leap year after Purim, after people have already heard that Pesach is in on a particular date. However, Rabbi Yishron and Rabbi Papias testify that we don't need to be concerned about this, and a leap year can be declared even after Purim. Alright, now the fifth testimony of Rabbi Yishron and Rabbi Papias is that Heim Heidu, they testified from Abinus Hashanah al-Tanai, that the Beis Din are able to declare the year a leap year on condition. There is a law that the Beis Din, the Sanhedrin, can only declare a leap year if the Nossi, the leader of the Sanhedrin, is present. Now what happens if, for whatever reason, he wasn't there at the time? But the entire Sanhedrin decided that it's appropriate to make the year into a leap year. They are able to do so and just say that it's on condition that when the Nossi arrives back here, he will agree to this decision. And indeed, Umaisab Raman Gamliel, there was a story which happened with Raman Gamliel, Shahalach Litl Rishus Mehegmain Basura, that he went to take permission regarding a particular matter from a government official in Surya of Shohalovai, and he delayed in coming, and he wasn't there when the Beis Din reached a decision to create a leap year. The Ibrus Ashona and the Sanhedrin declared the leap year al Tanai Lichshayitz Rabban Gamliel, on condition that Rabban Gamliel will want it and he'll agree. And indeed, Ochsheba, when he arrived later on, Omar Reitzani, he said that I do want this leap year to go ahead. The Nimtzes Ashona Moberes, so it emerged that indeed the year was turned into a leap year. Mishnah Ches, Heid Menachem ben Signai testified al Musaf Hayoyah Shal Shul Kizisim about the added part of the very large pot, a type of cauldron, used by people who processed the waste parts of olives, the pulp of olives. They would boil them up in these very large pots, And at the top of these large pots, often they would add sort of another layer, another row, a small amount of clay, which would make the pot slightly higher. And Menachem Ben Tzignai testified that extra part, the part of the pot which gave it a bit of extra room inside of the pot, it made the pot higher and taller, shu tomei, that extra part can also become tomei, even though it's sort of an addition to the actual utensil. It is not the pot itself, since it's essentially doing the same thing as the pot is doing, it's holding everything inside, so it can also become tomei, v'shol tzaboim, but the same thing, the clay layer added onto the top of a pot used by dyers, that is tohar, so tohar cannot become tomei. Reason being that if the mixture of dyes would touch this clay part of the pot, it could often actually ruin the dye when it continues being mixed in with the rest of it. It could actually ruin the dye, and therefore they would be careful to make sure that the dye wouldn't reach the top to where this clay part was. But therefore the clay wasn't doing the same thing as the pot was doing. Quite the opposite, they didn't want the dyes to reach that part of the pot, and therefore that cannot become tomei with the rest of the pot. Shehoyu Omrim, because they had said, until Menachem Ben Tzignai came with his testimony, they had said Chiluf HaDvarim, the exact opposite. That this clay part of a pot used by dyers, that can become tomei, because the dyers wanted that a lot. Because the dye is very expensive, and any part which spills over onto the outside of the pot would be lost, and they would be losing out money. So therefore they added this clay part to the top of the pot, to make sure that none of the dye would spill over and out of the pot. So this was very important for the dyers. Whereas the people who are processing the olive, the wasted parts of the olive, they're boiling that part, that's not worth a lot. So they wouldn't really care if some of it spilled over the pot. And therefore the clay part which was added for the people processing the olives, that wasn't so significant, and therefore that couldn't become tomei. That was what they said until Menachem Ben Tzignai gave his testimony. But when he gave his testimony, it was the exact opposite. For the reason that we explained, Mr. Tess, Hey, Rabbi Chunin ben Gudgada testified the following four things. Firstly, al hachireshes she'siyo aviha, regarding a deaf and dumb girl whose father married her off. And that's really the only way that she can get married on the midoraisa level. If her father accepts the marriage from another man on her behalf, although she herself lacks enough understanding to effect a fully valid marriage midoraisa, if her father does it, then it would be a proper marriage. In the same way as a girl under the age of bas mitzvah, if her father marries her off, it's valid midoraisa. Be as it may, once he has married her off, she's now no longer in her father's authority at all, and in order to be divorced, she herself would need to receive that get. The question is, can she be divorced by receiving the get, even though she hasn't really got any sufficient understanding to get married herself? So says Rabbi Chunin ben Gudgada, shehi yotza baget, that she can be divorced by receiving the get. Reason being that although for marriage her consent is required, to divorce one's wife, one does not need her permission, or her agreement to that matter. So therefore it makes no difference that she hasn't really got sufficient understanding, and she can be divorced, right? Number two, V'aketana bas Yisrael shenisa l'koyein, he testified about a girl under the age of bas mitzvah, who is a bas Yisrael, who got married to a koyein. And over here we're talking about where her father did not marry her off, rather her father died, and her mother and her brothers married her off, and this marriage is only valid midirabbanan. And Rabbi Chunin ben Gudgada testified she'echeles betruma, that she is allowed to eat truma, which can only be eaten by a kohen and a kohen's family. Since she is married to a kohen on a midrabbanan level, she is able to eat truma. Of course, not truma which is truma midiraisa, but truma which is truma midrabbanan. Since she's married on a midrabbanan level, she is able to also eat truma, which is truma midrabbanan. And we're not concerned that by allowing her to eat truma midrabbanan, she might come to eat truma midoraisa. No, we trust her that she'll make that differentiation and that she will only eat truma midrabbanan. Ve'emesa, and if she dies, Bala Yersha, her husband, who is her husband only on a midrabbanan level, he will be the one who inherits her. Even though midoraisa, really her father or her family should be the ones who inherit her, because midoraisa she's not married. Since midrabbanan she is married, the rabbanan said that regarding inheritance, her midrabbanan husband will be the one who will inherit her. And that's sort of counted as part of the second testimony. It's also regarding the same case. Thirdly, Val Hamoyesh Hagozol, he testified regarding a stolen beam, Shibanoi Babira, that the thief who stole it built it into a building, and now he comes to do tshuva, and he wants to return that which he stole. Halach is, sheitanes domov, it's enough that he give just the value of that beam, and he doesn't have to give the beam itself. Even though in general, if somebody steals something, he has to give back that item itself, he can't just give the value of the item. But here, to do that would mean demolishing half his house in order to obtain that beam. And that would probably discourage him from doing tshuva and from giving back anything. And therefore, we say, Mijabonon, it's enough that he just give back the value of the beam, and we don't want him to have to lose out of his own things, and to have to demolish the entire house in order to fulfill this mitzvah of giving back the item which he stole. And fourthly and finally, Valachatos Agzula, he testified regarding a stolen Korban Chatos, Shalei Noda Ola Rabim, that wasn't known to the public, it wasn't publicly known that this Korban was stolen. Shein Chaperes, that it does atone for the person who bought the Korban, even though, according to the strict letter of the law, if somebody steals something and designates it as a korban and brings the korban, it is not a valid korban and he has to bring another one. Over here, once again, in Jabonon, we say that it does atone, meaning the person who stole it would not need to bring another korban instead of it. Mipnei tikkun ha-mizbeach, as an enactment for the sake of the mizbeach, meaning we're concerned that if the koyanim find out that they offered up and they ate the meat of a korban which was actually invalid, they might come to withhold themselves from bringing future korbanos. They'll always think, how do we know that we're allowed to bring this korban? How do we know we can eat the meat of this korban? And they'll withhold themselves from bringing korbanos. And the mizbeach won't have koyanim to bring the korbanos on it. So to prevent that happening, we say that mijabonon, as long as the public didn't find out that this korban was stolen, we say that the thief will not need to bring another korban, and we view it as if this korban was valid, even though according to the strict letter of the law, it was not valid.